While the Hei Amud Beis, the second Mishnah, continuing with this theme of Mishnayos that have whatever applies to this doesn't apply to that, and vice versa. Here Rashi points out, here we're going to have a little bit different than we had before. We're going to have the same item where in different, or the same people, we're in different stages. In different stages, one din will apply to it, and in other stages, a different din will apply to it. So in a way, it's a little bit, I guess, like the previous Mishnah about the Ammons as well. But anyway, so the Mishnah says, HaTemed. Temed is, now we have, for example, in the Mishnayos from Yeshmalas and Mikveh that we learned for the 11 months and for Yahrzeit, Temed is mentioned a couple of times. Temed is, so you've taken grapes and you've pressed them to produce wine. Afterwards, you have the leftovers, you have the pulp left over from the grapes and whatever. So then what you may do, now obviously that pulp still has some grape juice in it. So what you may do is you'll pour water over those and let it steep for a while, and eventually the water will absorb the color and the flavor of the grape juice, the juice that's left in those dregs. And it'll become a sort of inferior kind of wine. So it'll be mostly water, but it'll have a certain wine flavor and color to it. So that kind of stuff is called temed. So you have the point when now consider, you know, wine becomes wine by fermenting. You have the yeast there that acts on the sugar in the grape juice that turn that into alcohol and carbon dioxide, and therefore the wine ferments and eventually you have wine. Here also, when you're doing this, if you have enough grape juice in the mix, then you'll also be able to have it. Will be able to ferment, and that's called in our Mishnah and the Gemara hechmetz. So hechmetz usually would mean that it became sour, as in it became vinegar. But here, what we mean is that it ferments to the extent that it becomes actual wine, that it has an alcohol content. So the Mishnah says, "Atemed abshalei hechmetz before it ferments, before it becomes wine, ainin nikach b'kesef ma'aser. You would not be allowed to buy it with ma'aser sheni money. You have to use ma'aser sheni money on food in Yerushalayim." And the Gemara explains in Eruvin that the food you spend it on has to be what's called pre v'gedulei karka. It has to be something that where one fruit or one object produces another fruit later on, namely fruits, vegetables, or anything derived from them, animals, all of them eventually produce a next generation, and gedulei karka, and they grow from the ground directly or indirectly. Plants grow from the ground, animals eat plants, which grow from the ground. Therefore, you can't buy water, with ma'aser sheni. Before this temed ferments, then it's considered basically just water. So therefore, you can't buy it with ma'aser sheni money. So in a nikah, because if I oh, poisel was a mikvah. And another din that would apply to it at that point, before it fermented, is it would still be considered water, and therefore enough of it would pass on a mikvah if the mikvah doesn't have 40 sah and 3 lugim or more of mine shurim of drawn water fall into it. Then it passes it also as we have examples of that in that pet of Yeshmal as a mikvah. So at this point, before it fermented, it's still considered water for that purpose. If the mikveh has 40 sah, then it won't become pasul no matter what falls into it, unless the color changes, as we're going to talk about a little bit in the Gemara. Tosfos, by the way, points out, Rashi had said that temed is made by pouring water in particular over the, Rashi learns that it's that you take the grape seeds and you pour water over them, and again, the seeds have a little bit of juice in them or on them, and that gets into the water. Rashi, Tosfos points out rather that what we're talking about really is more that we're talking about the dregs. We're talking about the pulp or the dregs left over from winemaking where you pour water over that. In any case, the point is, again, that before it ferments, before it becomes wine, it's still considered water for these purposes in halacha as far as ma'aser sheni and as far as mikveh. Misha Hechmitz, once it ferments and becomes wine, Nikach the Pesach Maisa, then you would be allowed to buy it with Maisa Shani money, because now it's considered actual wine, but in a postal as a mikveh, and it won't pass on the mikveh if it falls into it, because it's not considered water anymore. Now, if enough of it falls into a mikveh that it changes the color, that's something else. Then it will pass all the mikveh, but not because of mayim shuvim, but rather because it changed the color. Tartus just points out, further on, on top of blah, 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 that even if this tenet contains the full logum of water, nevertheless, in other words, let's say, so you started with 3 logum of water, and now you have, it's a little more, it's somewhat more than 3. Yes, the Gemara is going to tell you, we'll talk about in the Gemara, that you have 4 or more logum now, that enough juice came out of the seeds or the pulp or whatever to have a fourth log. So you have 3, the Tosfa says, you have 3 full logum of water, nevertheless it won't pass over mikveh because it doesn't have the color of water anymore. Or some other Rishonim disagree with that and say that no, if it has 3 logum of water in itself, even though it looks like wine now, it would actually pass over mikveh. This is actually, we're going to talk about a little further, we're going to talk about cases based on those Mishnayos and Yeshmalin, about cases where you have 3 logum of water that don't look like water, or vice versa, less than 3 logum of water that do look, plus less than 3 logum of water mixed with something else that do look like water, and this gets into that whole question of when we consider it water and when not. So this is one example, then, again, where you have something in 2 different stages, the same temet before it ferments versus after it ferments, where it has different dinim. Similarly, continues the Mishnah, Achin Hashutfin, brothers who are partners, meaning, in other words, that they inherited their father's estate jointly, and now they're continuing to run the estate jointly. So there are 2 dinim that are only relevant in our case over here. One of them is kolboin. We touched on at the end of near the end of Menachos that when you give Masa Shekel, you're often required to give a small amount together with it called a kolboin. It's a machlokas in a Mishnah and Shkolim how much it is, and it's also a machlokas we talked about in Menachos what exactly the kolboin is so used for. But the basic idea is that when you're giving your Masa Shekel, often you need to give a kolboin. Now one example where you would have to give, or where you even have to give extra, is if 2 people, one idea is why the kolban is necessary in the first place, is because coins are not always full weight, so when you're giving your maksa shekel, it may be a little bit underweight, and therefore the kolban helps make up for it. Another point is when you're, for example, a maksa shekel coins that Amman points out are in very high demand that time of year, because everybody needs to give their maksa shekel, so therefore, like, you need to pay an extra fee in order to get a maksa shekel coin. So now you can have cases where, so now there are different cases. When is a person chayav or potter from a kolban? One of them being that if a person is giving on behalf of somebody else, then he's potter from a kolban. On the other hand, when you have, for example, people take a shekel and give it to cover the machzor shekel of both of them, then they're chayav and a kolban. So then, shachayavin b'kolbon, so in a case where they're chayavin kolbon, namely, suppose that they actually divided up the estate, and then they decided, you know what, let's pull it back together and create a new partnership. So now, when they give matzah shekel out of the assets of the partnership, they each have to give their kolbon, because each of them is giving their own independent matzah shekel. They're giving us one large shekel coin, but nevertheless, they're still chayav in a kolbon for each one. In a case like that, however, the term Maisa Behema, in that case, though, they would be potter from giving Maisa Behema on any of the animals that they own in partnership. The reason is because, as we're going to learn in Masechta Bechoros, which is the next Masechta after this one, best of them, so we'll learn in a few months, animals that belong to a partnership are potter from Maisa Behema. We learn it from a pasuk that it says Yilacha in the singular, meaning that it doesn't apply to animals that are owned jointly by several people. So in the case where they inherited the estate, then they divide it up. Then they join back together in a partnership. They will be chayiv and kolban, but at the same time, they're going to be potter from maisa behema. Shachayavim b'maisa behema, on the other hand, in a case where they're chayiv and maisa behema, namely if they didn't split up the estate yet, they're just continuing to manage the estate jointly as though it was their father's. Well, then, in effect, we consider as though their father was alive and the animals belong to him. Well, then it's single ownership, therefore it's chayiv and maisa behema. In such a case, turim not kolban, but in such case, they will be potter from kolban because now what's happening in effect is, again, it's as if their father was still alive and the estate belongs to him and he's giving matzah shekel on behalf of his 2 sons. And in that case, there's no chiyuv of a kolban because the kolban is primarily only when you're giving your own matzah shekel. This Mishnah is quoted in a few places in the past, and in every place, so here we have in front of us, the Mishnah says, ha'achin ha'shutfin, and that's Rashi's girsa in every place where this is brought. The Rambam actually has a different girsa. The Rambam has a girsa ha'achim v'hashutfin. So the Rambam understands we're talking about 2 cases. that whether brothers inherited from their father, or whether people created a partnership, and the Rambam learns basically that the reason why the animal, in certain cases, the animals will be potter from Maisa Behema in the first case, is because anything that you bought, any animals that you bought, are also potter from Maisa Behema, and therefore any animals that they have, so the Rambam learns, any animals that they first put into the partnership are considered as though they bought from one another, therefore they're going to be potter from Maisa Behema. However, on the other hand, they're chayiv and kolban, like when two people are jointly giving Maisa Sheni together, giving Maisa Shekel together. On the other hand, then you have, later on, you have the money that they earn during the partnership, or the animals that are born during the partnership, so then it's something new, it's not something bought, so then they're going to be chayiv and Maisa Behema, but again, they'll be potter from kolban, because we consider it again as though their father is still alive and he's as though somebody else is giving on their behalf, as though, almost as though the partnership or the corporation is an entity of its own that's giving on their behalf. So here we also have, as it actually says, here we're talking about where it's a din that applies in one scenario will not apply in the other. You're not going to have a case where the chayav and tolban and Maisa Behema will falter from both of them. So let's go back to this matter of temed and discuss it. The Gemara says, mani masnissin. The part about the kolban and Maisa Behema, the Gemara is not going to be dealing with over here, because that's dealt with in other places in Shas. In particular, we're going to be discussing it at the end of Masechta Bechoros in a few months. That's the Shem. It's also discussed in other places in Shas. But let's focus on the temed part. So the Gemara says, mani masnissin. Well, who does our Mishnah go like when, again, our Mishnah had distinguished the temed, whether it fermented or not? Now, a different distinction you can make is how much water do you put in versus how much temed did you get out, which is going to tell you, therefore, in other words, how much liquid did you actually extract from these grape seeds or grape pulp or whatever that you used as the base for the temed. Usually there's a distinction along those lines as well, and our mission is not making. So mani masnissin, says the Gemara, mani masnissin, who is on mission going like loy Rabbi Yehuda v'loy Rabbanon? It seems to be neither like Rabbi Yehuda nor the Rabbanon. The Tanya, we learn in a Brice, actually, the Tanan, it says on the side, it's actually a Mishnah in the Sefer Meisters. And the Tamid, if a person is making Tamid, the Nosan Mayan Bermuda, he put in a certain amount of water, and later on, after he finished the process of making the Tamid, he finds he has exactly as much water as before. So it does have a flavor and a color of wine, but nevertheless, there's no more than he had before. Well, then potter, so now he's going to be potter from taking meiser for it, because now you don't have, in effect, it's not wine, it's water, and you don't take meiser from water. It does have a flavor, it does have a color and a flavor, but nevertheless, that's not enough to make it chayev, to make it chayev and meiser. And so, Choice was points out that, I mean, after all, why not? After all, I mean, it has a taste of tevel. These grape seeds or whatever, the juice in these seeds or pulp or whatever has not been meisered. And so it's tevel, and the tevel is giving a flavor into the water. Why shouldn't it be chayev and meisered? Tosfos says, because the fact is, the fact that you didn't get anything extra out, the fact that you have the same number of water, the same amount of water as you had before, means that what you have over here is not really, can't really be considered a taste in halacha. It's just like almost like an aroma, like a bouquet or something. Shiur ba'alma, Tosfos calls it, like a sharp taste, not really enough of a flavor to make it chayev and meisered. So the Tanakhama says he's potter, but Rabbi Yehuda machayev. Rabbi Yehuda says that he's chayev because Rabbi Yehuda would say that we go according to the color and the flavor, and therefore that's enough to make it chayev and meisered. The Tosfos had mentioned before that you have, you know, the question is whether we're talking about that you started with grape seeds or grape pulp. There's actually a machloekas along those lines in the Sefer Pesachim about whether the Yehuda and the Chachamim would be arguing in both cases, or whether only in the case of pulp. So Rashi over here mentions that we're dealing over here with seeds, and Rashi explains accordingly, which is one version of Gemara and Pesachim. Over there, Tosfos points out that based on that Gemara and Pesachim, it would seem that the it would actually be that we're talking about the pulp, and only then would Rabbi Yehuda be mechayev and meiser, because the pulp usually contains a significant amount of grape juice in it. So now our Mishnah which distinguishes only between whether it's a whether hechnitz, whether it's fermented or not, and doesn't talk about how much water you put in versus how much you got out. That doesn't seem to be according to either opinion. Tosfos points out there is another point as well, another relevant Gemara on this, and Bava Basra discusses where you can have you put in three, for example, you put in three logim of water, and then when you draw it off, you have four logim altogether of temet. Then for sure, Tosfos points out, everybody would hold that it's chayev in my soup, even if it didn't ferment yet. You have so much extra that came into it. Fully one third of it now is, or one quarter of it now, is the juice that came out of the pulp or whatever. Then for sure, it would be chayev in my soup. But here we're talking about where it's less than that. So money. So who does our Mishnah go like? Eat Rabbanon. If it goes according to Rabbanon, then it doesn't matter. Then Achagav the Hechmetz. Even if fermented, they're saying that it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. The question is how much water you put in versus how much wine you got out. Again, as Tosfos points out, if you got out a full nother lug or whatever, a full nother measure of juice out of it, there's no question it would be chayiv and maaser, but that's apparently not what our Mishnah is talking about. Then there'd be no reason either to distinguish between hechmetz and not. Rabbi Yehuda, and if it follows Rabbi Yehuda, afagav delei hechmetz, then Rabbi Yehuda doesn't care whether it ferments or not. Either way, he would be making it chayiv and maaser. As Tosfos says that if you had a lot extra that came out, then for sure it would be considered wine, even if not hechmetz, and then therefore our Mishnah is clearly talking about where you didn't get so much extra out, and then we showed him discuss about exactly what the scenario is. But the point is, our Mishnah doesn't mention any such thing at all. It only focuses on hechmetz or not hechmetz. So that doesn't follow either the Yehuda or the Chacham. So the answer is Amar of Nachman, Amar Rav Avur, b'shehechmetz machloikas. The machloikas in our Mishnah is indeed, the machloikas in the Mishnah in Maisus is indeed where the mixture fermented, or masnissim, Rav Yehuda, and therefore our Mishnah specifically goes according to Rav Yehuda, where the Chachamim would say that it's potter even if hechmetz. But our Mishnah would go according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says that if hechmetz, then it's considered wine. Now Rashi and Tosfos both point out we don't want to say that our Mishnah rather is according to the Chachamim, and we're going to say that we're talking about loy hechmetz because again, if we're talking about that he got, if the Mishnah in Maisus is telling us that he got exactly as much water as he put in, if not hechmetz, Rabbi Yehuda won't say that it's chayev, and therefore it wouldn't work with our Mishnah, which distinguishes hechmetz or not hechmetz. Says similarly that our Mishnah that the machloikas in Masechta Maisus is where hechmetz, and our Mishnah follows the opinion that when, and our Mishnah follows Rabbi Yehuda, that when hechmetz, when it ferments, then it's chayiv and meiser, and Rabbi Yehuda doesn't care how much extra you got, whether you got anything extra, or whether you started out with a certain amount of water and wound up with the same amount, of temet. Okay, because again, as Rashi and Tosfos point out, if Rabbi Yehuda would say that you're talking about where you have exactly as much as in the Mishnah in Maestros, and where it didn't ferment, there's no reason that Rabbi Yehuda would say that it's chayiv. Okay. Talking further about this topic of temet, suppose that you bought temed with mice of shiny money before it fermented, and later on it fermented and became wine, kona meiser, then the meiser has been validly bought, meaning, in other words, the money now becomes cholin. The general rule is when you use mice of shiny money the proper way on food or drink, following the guidelines in halacha, then that's it. The food now gains the status of mice of shiny, and you have to eat it in your shalayim, and only when you're tougher, and so on and so forth, and the money now becomes cholin. Whereas if loy kona meiser, if you have a case, you spend it on something you're not supposed to, then the money is still considered Maaser Sheni money, and you're going to have to, and the vendor is going to have to go back to you and get back his item and return you your money so that you can spend it properly. So now, says Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Avor, that if you bought the temet before it fermented, which you weren't supposed to do, but later on it fermented, then Kona Maaser, then it comes out that Maaser has been validly acquired and the money becomes golden. My timer, Iglai Milsa Lamafreya, because now it comes out, it's been revealed in retrospect to Peirahu, that it is considered Peiris, that even before it fermented, it was on the way to doing that, And therefore that now it's going to now, once it's fermented, then it turns out that you were good all along. In that case, then Tosfos points out, when we said before, the Shehef Mitz Machloikas, that in the Mishnah in Maisris, we're talking about the Machloikas of Yehuda and the Chacham, is when Hefmetz, now, based on this, it would come out, not only when actually Hefmetz, but even when eventually it does. Then we can still say the Dinim, it turns out that the Dinim apply in retrospect. So the Gemara says Ella Dikatani, Ella Masnissin Dikatani. Yeah, but what about then on Mishnah, where it distinguishes Hechmetz Ein Loi, Hechmetz Loi, where it distinguishes between whether Hechmetz or between whether Hechmetz or not? So why should we say why? So in other words, the Mishnah is saying if you bought it before Hechmetz, then it's not valid. It's not a valid purchase with my Sushani money. Why? Duma Ishavke Havamachmetz. Why? Maybe he just jumped the gun a little bit. Maybe if he had waited, eventually this temed would have fermented. So Rashi points out that the point of the question is most temed does ferment eventually. Most temed does have enough grape juice stuff in it to be able to ferment. So therefore we can assume that eventually if he had left it long enough, it would have fermented. That's a point of Rashi. Tosfos says that no, the question is not about kesef maisel. It's true, of course, you can't buy it because of a sofet like that. Rather, the question would be that we're saying that it also, before Hechmes, the Mishnah had also said that three logim of it will passel a mikveh that's less than 40 saw. So the question is why? We shouldn't passel a mikveh just because of a sofet. The Rashba gives yet a different explanation of the question that if the Mishnah would say that, again, going back to Maisa Shani, if we're going to say that if you bought this tenet with Maisa Shani money, and we're going to say before Hechmetz it's no good, then that would mean, in other words, so what happens then, if somebody uses the money to Makadish a woman, does it work or does it not? How can the Mishnah say? The Rashba says that for sure, Einan Nikah, the Kesef Maisa, cannot be bought with Maisa Shani money, and therefore the money doesn't belong to the vendor of this not yet fermented temed, and therefore he would be able to use it to be, and therefore he can't use it to be a kaddish a woman, and if it does, then the condition are completely invalid, shouldn't at least be a suffix, because again, as Rashi says, most temed does ferment. So Amar Rabba, the Shashir Mimena Bakois Veloi Hechmetz. You're talking about the case in our Mishnah where he put some of the temed in a cup, and time passed, and it should have been long enough for it to ferment, and it didn't. So then we can see that the whole batch would never. So in other words, what happened is, so he bought a batch of not yet fermented temed. He bought, let's say, a gallon of not yet fermented temed. True, he drinks it before it fermented, so we have no way of knowing what would have happened. But here, says Rabba, let's say beforehand he poured off some of it into a cup and put it aside to see what's going to happen with it. And the contents of the cup never end up fermenting. Well, then we know that the whole large amount, the rest of the gallon, would never have fermented either. Therefore, we can say that it was an invalid purchase with Maisa Shani money, and therefore the money has to be refunded, and therefore it would pass to the mikvah and so forth. Rava says you don't need that answer either. You can even say you're talking about where eventually the whole mixture did ferment, because Hamani Rav Yechon ben Nuri, you could say that our Mishnah is according to Rav Yechon ben Nuri, who says that it doesn't matter whether it tastes like. He says you go according to what it looks like. And therefore here it doesn't look like wine yet because Loi Hechmetz, and therefore we don't care. The fact that later on it's going to be Hechmetz, the fact is that right now it did. It's not. Namely, we learn in a Mishnah, one of those Mishnayos in Yeshmalin about these dinim of three lugim of Mayim Shurvan Pasol and Mikvah. The Mishnah says, Shloishes lugim Mayim Chosu Kotor, three lugim of water missing one quarter. A quarter is 1/64th of a lug. So you're talking about missing a very tiny amount, less than three lugim. Now, at that point, if it would have fallen into a mikveh, it would have passel it because you'd have to need three lugim and no less in order to passel it. So it's lacking a quarter. Shenafel asochin quarter of yayin. Now a quarter of wine fell into that water. And now the whole mixture looks like wine. Looks like very dilute wine, but wine all the same. The nafel, the mikveh, if now that mixture falls into the mikveh, like saluhu, it would not passel it. Because you don't have three full lugim of water to passel the mikveh. This part everybody agrees to, although there are different Gersois. In fact, Rashi brings further along, Tosfos also discusses over here, that there are different Gersois, whether the scenario we're talking about over here is you started with less than 3 lugim of water, and the wine brought it up to 3 lugim, in which case the reason it doesn't pass the mikveh has nothing to do with the color of it, it has to do with the fact that you have less than 3 lugim of water. There's a different Gersa. When you don't have the words chosel kotev, you just have shloshes logemayin, but not a certain kout of yayin, which is in fact in the Mishnayos that we have in the back of the Siddur when we learn them for a yortzeit and everything, we in fact do not have the words chosel kotev in the Mishnah over there. You just have shloshes logemayin, but not a certain kout of yayin, in which case you do have 3 lugim of water. The reason why it doesn't pass on the mikvah is because it looks like wine. So, in fact, there's machlokas in the Gemara in Matos about the correct wording of our Mishnah. So the question is, the Rishonim are discussing which version, based on that Gemara in Matos, we have two different versions of the Mishnah that were going around among the Amiroim, which one is the Gemara quoting in our context? Anyway, the Mishnah continues. If you have 3 lugim of water less 1 kotev, and here we are definitely talking about where it's missing 1 kotev, and a kotev of milk falls into it. Now milk, being whitish, is not going to change the color of the water significantly. The whole thing still looks like water. If that mixture falls into the mikveh, it will not pass away, because again, you don't have three full lugim of water. So again, if we have the girsa in the ratio, shloshes logemayim chosel kotev, if in both cases the water is lacking in kotev, then we're saying that that both of them is talking about you have less than 3 lugim of water, and in the first case, not only is there less than 3 lugim, but it also looks like wine, and in the second case, it looks like water, but nevertheless, you don't have 3 full lugim of water. If you say the girsa is that in the ratio without the chosel kotev, then there are two different cases. In the ratio, it's not chosel because it looks like wine, even though you have 3 lugim of water. And in the sefer, it's not chosel because you don't have 3 full lugim of water. Anyway, though, Rabbi Yochanan Nuri says that it all follows the color, and therefore in that second case there, in fact, it will passel the mikveh, because Rabbi Yochanan Nuri is going to say you have to be consistent, just like in the ratio, you're going according to the appearance of it, and you're saying because it looks like wine, it's not possible, even though you have 3 full lugim in the sefer, also you have to follow the color, and right now it looks like 3 lugim of water, and therefore it passes it. So now the point is, in other words, that Rava finishes off his proof. So don't we see that Rabbi Yochanan is saying Vasa Chazusa as women, that we go according to the color of it, according to the appearance of it, and in the second case, therefore, since it looks like water, then it passes the mikveh, even though it's not 3 full lugim of water. Hachanami, so Vasa Chazusa. Well, then, in our case, in our Mishnah, when we're talking about the Temet, also you have to look at the appearance of it. And the fact is, before hefnitz, before it ferments, then it looks like water. So now, the time of the chazusa, the high mayaninu, so now, right now, before it ferments, the taste and the appearance of this looks like water. So it hasn't yet developed the taste of wine, and it hasn't yet developed the color of wine. Therefore we can say, Rav Nachman is telling us that you can... That if we bought it and afterwards hechmitz, then we're fine because he's going according to the chachamim, where it doesn't matter. You don't go according to the color of it. You go according to the metzius, and the fact is, you look at eventually it's going to ferment, and after all, most temet ferments according to Rashi. Therefore, we could buy it with Maisa Feni, or according to Tosfos, the vort is that therefore, since most temet ferments, we shouldn't assume that it will pass all the mikveh because it's only a suf. But the point is, since most temet ferments, we should assume that this vendor validly owns the money and he's able to be Makadish, a woman with it. As opposed to Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, so our Mishnah would go according to Rabbi Yochanan Nuri, that you go according to the appearance of it, and right now it hasn't yet fermented, and it hasn't yet become, so therefore there's no contradiction from our Mishnah against Rabbi Nachman, because they're talking according to two different tenor. Next, the Gemara continues. Completed the Rabbi Lazar. Now, this whole discussion over here, that this last point that we were saying And now we said before we were saying at the bottom of the previous Amud and the top of our Amud that Rav Nachman had said in the name of Rabbi Baruch Huller that the Mishnah that we had quoted before from the Sechta Maisus where Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim argue about the status of Temed, whether if you put in a certain amount of water and got the same back and got the same amount of water, where Rabbi Yehuda the Chachamim say it's Potter from Meiser Shani and it's Potter from Meiser and Rabbi Yehuda says it's Chayev. And Rav Nachman had said in the name of Rabbi Alor, the machlokes is specifically when it fermented. So on the one hand, it's fermented, so it looks and tastes like the wine. On the other hand, it's only exactly as much water as you put in, so therefore you can't really say that it became wine. So that was one explanation. Now the Gemara comes out, completely good to Rabbi Lazar. Now, this understanding, though, disagrees with Rabbi Lazar's understanding. Rabbi Lazar has a different understanding of the machlokes of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim. So the Amr Rabbi Lazar, Akfal Moedim, Sheim Afrishin Alav Mimakam Achar Elim Ken Hecht. Rabbi Lazar says that both Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says that Temen will always be Chayiv and Meiser, he will agree that you can't separate Shuma and Meiser on behalf of it Mimakam Achar from a different batch of Temed, Elim Ken Hecht, unless the one that you're going to be taking Meiser on behalf of has already fermented. So then, in other words, you'll have in front of you two batches of Temed, both of which are fermented, both of which are turned into wine. So now, Rabbi Yehuda will say that you can take Meiser from one on behalf of the other. Therefore, we see that Rabbi Lazar clearly says that the machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim is when not happens. In other words, the implication is Rabbi Yehuda is going to say it's chayiv even if it wasn't yet hechmetz. But at that point, when not hechmetz, you cannot take a different batch of temed and give on behalf of it because the Gemara teaches out. Meaning that Rabbi Yehuda is only going to say that you're chayiv and hechmetz even when not hechmetz, only from it itself. You're going to take from this batch of temed itself and you're going to separate out the appropriate amounts of Truma and Meiser. Avam and Alma Loi, but not from a different batch. You're going to say the other batch hasn't fermented yet either. What's the problem? The problem is, not necessarily. It could end up that one batch ferments and the other one will not. In other words, even Rabbi Yehuda, why would Rabbi Yehuda be saying that Temed, when you put in 3 lugim of water, for example, and you got back 3 lugim of Temed, why would Rabbi Yehuda become Chayven and Meiser before Hechmet? Because Rabbi Yehuda says, maybe if it's going to be Hechmet, and therefore it's Chayven and Meiser. But even he says, we're not talking about necessarily that happened yet. And therefore, so now if you have 2 batches, the problem is, you might end up, if you're going to separate Trumas and Nisus from one batch on behalf of the other one, you might end up, one of them was Chayev and the other was Potter, and then you're going to end up separating from what's Chayev on behalf of what's Potter, and then, in other words, you think you separated something as Truma, and it's not. The fact is that the fact is it's actually Tevel. It's actually something which is also even for the Koyin to eat, and therefore you're going to be Machshel here, or we're not Potter, Alachiyuv. Or from what's potter on what's chayev, and then again you're going to have that you're eating tevel over here from the rest of it because the rest of it really was chayev in truma and the other batch was really chayev in truma and meiser and you haven't taken proper trumas and meisers from it and therefore it's tevel. So one way or the other, in other words, there may be tevel involved over here because one batch is going to be chayev and one is potter. So only if you're taking from within the same batch itself, then you don't have a problem. So again, though, here we're talking about where neither of them fermented. Again, Rabbi Yehuda is saying that you have to give even before it's fermented, but he would say, says Rabbi Lazar, that at this point you can only give from within the same batch itself. Once the 2 batches fermented, then you can give from one on behalf of the other, because once they fermented, then there's no problem that they might not ferment, and therefore there's no problem of putter and feet. But Amban has a different explanation. So in other words, it comes out that Rabbi Lazar is understanding the machloikas of Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim of whether this temen is chayiv and meiser or not, that Rabbi Yehuda would say even if it didn't ferment yet, Rabbi Yehuda would already hold it's chayiv and meiser because it might ferment. But Amban has a different explanation. He says that the machloikas would be in either case, whether hechmetz or loy hechmetz. So some would say hechmetz or not, it's still potter from meiser because you put in 3 measures of water when you only got 3 measures of temen. And Rabbi Yehuda would say, on the other hand, even if loy hechmetz, it's still chayev and meiser. And even if loy hechmitzu, we would still say says the Ramban that one of them might have more wine mixed into it and then the other one less. So one has wine mixed into it and not the other. Then you also have, within that, you have different Rishonim that discuss, well, according to Rabbi Elazar's understanding, according to Rabbi Nachman's understanding, our Mishnah clearly goes according to Rabbi Yehuda, as we said at the top of the Amud. According to Rabbi Elazar, what would it be? So the Rashba explains that our Mishnah would be according to the following Rabbi Elazar's logic. Our Mishnah would be according to the Chachamim, because only the Chachamim because Rabbi Yehuda would say he's chayiv and ma'aser, even if loy hechmet, and our Mishnah had said that only if hechmet is it considered wine. The Shitrim Kubetza says it could work according to Rabbi Yehuda as well, and the Rashba says, looking at it from the Ramban's point of view, that it could actually be that the Mishnah could only be, like we said before, like Rabbi Yechon and Nuri, who says that you go according to what it looks like, and before Hechmetz it still looks like water, and after Hechmetz it looks like wine. Okay. So in other words, so far we're saying, so again, we have a machlokes of Yehuda and the Chachamim, not Temed. How does that, and we also have Rabbi Yechon and Nuri, so how does that map to our Mishnah? So again, according to Rabbi Nachman, in the name of Rabbi Baravua, our Mishnah, which distinguishes between Hechmetz and not Hechmetz, would be only according to Rabbi Yehuda. Even Rabbi Yehuda is not Machayev if it's not Hechmetz. And therefore, our Mishnah would follow him. According to Rabbi Elazar, we're saying that according to Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yehuda would be Machayev even if Loi Hechmetz. What does that mean in terms of our Mishnah? So again, we have several different Rishonim that have different opinions about it. And then we also have, we mentioned before, the opinion of Rabbi Yechon and Nuri, that on Mishnah to be specifically like Rabbi Yechon and Nuri, who says that we go according to the looks of it and nothing else, and therefore according to him, Hechmetz or Lo Hechmetz would be that key difference whether it actually looks like wine or not. Okay, now another din as far as Temed. Tanan Rabbanan, as Temed actually happens, before Temed ferments, then again it's still considered like water. Now we pointed out before that there's the possibility that it might yet ferment. So as the choice was pointed out, we had what Rabba had said before, where you put some of it into a cup and you see what's going to happen with that. And then based on that, you can evaluate what would have happened with the rest. So here you have a similar, here the next discussion is going to be along those lines, is going to be along those lines as well. So now we have another din, mashike b'mayim. So now you're able to do hashaka with it in wool. Namely like this. Food and drink, of course, can become tahor. But foods and drinks cannot be made tahor by dipping them in a mikveh. The whole concept of dipping things in a mikveh only applies to kalim and clothing and things like people and then things of that sort. There is one exception. If you have water that became tameh, then you are able to be mitahor it by doing hashaka. Hashaka literally means kissing. What you do is you take a container full of this water, you dip it in, you put it in the mikveh so that the water of the mikveh just barely touches the water in the container. Now that water in the container is considered like part of the mikveh, and therefore it becomes tahor by virtue of being part of the mikveh. So now we learn in the Sraisa that before Temed fermented, when it's still considered like water, Mashita b'mayim, now you're able to do Hashoka for it. If it becomes Tomei, you're able to do Hashoka for it and make it tahor by having it touch and slightly blend with the mikveh water. Misha Hechmetz ain't Mashita b'mayim. Once it's fermented, you cannot do hashaka, because then the whole concept of hashaka only applies to water, not to wine. The taste of it is not going to be bottled. So the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, lo shanu ela shetim de b'mayim tahorim. Now this would only apply though if you made the temet to begin with water that was tahor, v'nitmu, and then they became tamei. So then, before it fermented, you're able to do the hashaka, but not afterwards. Aval tmei meir, but says Rava, if the water was tamei to begin with, loy, then you cannot do hashaka. With it. So the Gemara says, Ozer of Gvia mi Beit Kosel, Amr l'shmaita kamei d'ramashi, Rav Gvia from Beit Kosel, the name of a place, went and told over the statement of Rava to Rav Ashi. And I need an explanation. I don't understand what the logic for the distinction is. Yes, Maishna Tmei Mikra. What's the difference? If the water was Tomei before he made Temet out of it, the loy, you're telling me that it's not gonna work to do Hashoka with it. Damrin and Aidi de Maya Yakiri. You're gonna say water is heavier than the wine, the wine itself. In other words, you're talking about the little amount of grape juice that went into this and turns it into fermented temet. That stuff is lighter. Shachmiteto, and therefore the water is going to sink to the bottom, or Peter Koffingleil, meanwhile the wine, which is slightly lighter, is going to float on the top, and therefore Hashaka won't work because the Hashaka won't reach the water. It'll reach the wine, but it's not necessarily going to reach the water. Tosfos points out that on the face of it, it still should work because, after all, it's all liquids. But Tosfos says, fine, if you're going to, for example, you're going to toggle a peli that has liquids in it, even though full tefillah of it, then fine, the liquids are not going to be a chatzitza. You were only talking about a shaka, so therefore, in effect, we're going to say that the wine, the surface, which is more wine than water, is going to block the shaka from reaching the water. Well, asks Rubia, Ihochi, to hurt him a little safe nick. Well, by that logic, even if the water was to begin with Tahu and later on became Tomei Nami, the same thing should apply. The fact is, the Hashaka is not going to go to the water. Elam Valbri, so no, we have to say, really, it's not like that. There's no separate layers of wine and water over here. It's all thoroughly blended. Hachanami and Valbri. Well, then, what's the difference whether the water was Tomei before the Hashaka? Either way, it's thoroughly mixed. We can assume that it's thoroughly mixed, and therefore it shouldn't make a difference. So why is Rava making this distinction? Says Rav, I don't understand the logic behind the distinction. Tosfos says, okay, Rava's logic would be that since the water became tomei by itself, then you'd need to do a shaka of it by itself, not when it's mixed with something else. Okay, then Amban gives a different explanation that Rava would say, it's not really mevalvely, it's not necessarily so evenly mixed, but when it became, when the water was at first tahor, then okay, when it became tummy, the whole mixture became tummy, the water and the wine, and therefore you can do a shaka of it together, as opposed to when the water became tummy by itself, then you're going to have an effect, you have a tummy and a tahor substance that are lying one on top of the other, and that shaka is not really going to work for the tummy substance that's underneath. So there are reasons to understand Rava's Svara, but nevertheless, given that the Gemara doesn't bring up any of those Svaras, the halacha is not like that. The halacha, it doesn't matter whether the tumen was made with tomei or tahor water. Either way, before it ferments, you can do akhtaka with it, and not afterwards. Another Mishnah in the series of when you have something that applies to one, it doesn't apply to the other. The Mishnah says, Tol mokin sheyesh mecher ein kunas. We know the Torah tells us in Parshas Mishpatim that a father could sell his daughter as an omer hevriya, as a maidservant, and when she's a ktana. Now, he can only do it when she's a ktana. She goes free when she becomes a naira automatically, when she develops shtei sairus, and certainly therefore her father is not able to sell her at that point. So you can only sell her as a ktana. Now, you also have, the Torah tells us, the concept of knas. The Torah tells us, you have in Parshas Mishpatim, If a man seduces a girl then to have relations with him, then he has to either pay, he has to either marry her and write her out of the silver for the full amount, or he has to pay a knas. Then you have the case of oines, where the Torah tells us in Parashas Kesedse that if a man rapes a girl, then he's forced to marry her if she wants. If she and her father want, he then, it doesn't matter what he wants, he's forced to marry her, and he also has to pay a knas. That concept of knas, as we're going to see, applies only when she's a naira. Only when you have three stages in a girl's development. She's a katana until she's at least 12 years old and also develops shtei sairus. After that she becomes a naira for 6 months. After the 6 months she becomes a bergeres, a fully mature woman, lahalacha. So now the Mishnah says, Kol mokum sheyesh mecher ein knas. In any case where her father is allowed to sell her, namely when she's a katana, then there's no knas, because if somebody seduced her or raped her, then the knas would not apply when she's a ktana, because the Torah mentions this concept only by naira. So the man should give lavia naira, a mission cost, if he should pay 50 selah to the father of the naira. So we see it doesn't apply to a ktana. And vice versa, where does knas, where she's a naira, and knas would apply for an ernest and mafata, then the father is no longer able to sell her, because if she's going to go free, if she develops face iris and becomes a naira, certainly the father is not going to be able to sell her anymore at that point. So the Gemara says, however, Omer of Yehuda Omer Rav, Zudir Rav Meir. That's only according to Rav Meir. The Chum say, in fact, there is an overlap, there is a time in the girl's life when there can be both knas and mecher, namely when she's a ktana. the chum hold that the din of knas of onus and mefata would in fact apply to a ktana as well. The tanya, as we learn in a breast, ktana vas yom echad vach tovish shtei sairis, a girl from when she's born until she develops shtei sairis at the age of 12 or later, yeshlam necha ve'en lo knas, then the Mishnah says in Nida, that, or actually, the Braisa, the Mishnah in Nida talks about that the Shtei Cyrus, but the Braisa says, from when she's born until she develops Shtei Cyrus, Yeshlam Necha Ve'en Lachnas, the father can sell her as an Omer Evriya, but there's no Knas if somebody is Onus or Mefata. Mishitovi Shtei Cyrus, once she develops Shtei Cyrus, Ad Shetivgar, until she becomes a Begera, 6 months later, Yeshlam Knas Ve'en Lachnas, there can be a Knas if somebody is Onus or Mefata, who during that 6 month window, Ve'en Lachnas, but there's no sale anymore, her father can't sell her as an Omer Evriya. Divrei Reb Meir, that's what Reb Meir holds. Shehoy Reb Meir Omer, Reb Meir said the rule as we have in our Mishnah. Kol makom sheyesh mecher in knas, v'chol makom sheyesh knas in mecher. It's one or the other. V'chom say no. Ktanu v'as shalosh shanim yem echad. V'ad shetivgo yesh laknas. From when the girl is 3 years old until she becomes a bageres, she has a knas, meaning there was a coincidence. But knas for unus and mefata applies equally well when she's a ktana or when she's a bageres. The reason we're mentioning 3 years is because below three, the bia is not considered a bia in halacha. So then we know, we'll learn about it in the second nida next year around this time, Be'ez Hashem. But in any case, we see that that our Mishnah cannot go like the Chachamim, because according to the Chachamim, there is in fact a time when there is both mefata and knas. Well, the Chachamim are expressing it in the Braisa and saying, yesh lo knas. So the question is, knas ein mecher lo? Are they implying that there's only a knas during that time, but the father can't sell her? The fact is, the father can certainly sell her as an omer hevriya, which is when she's a child. Ema, so you're right. What the Braisa means is, after knas, mecher mecher, the Chachamim holder is in fact both knas and mecher. The father is in fact able to, the father is in fact allowed during that time, which is a ktana, to sell her as an omer hevriya, as well as also to receive a shnas if somebody is onus or mefata. Rashi points out the reason is because even if it's true the pasuk does say nara, but in every case in these psukim, there's one case and there's one time in the Torah when the word nara is written with a hey at the end. Every other time in the Torah, including these cases of onus and mefata, where it says the word nara, the hey at the end is missing. So therefore, we can darshan that it means not only a full nara who has already developed shtei sairus, but even a ktana who is below that age. Therefore, the Chachamim will say there is in fact knas for a girl that age, and there is also mecha. The Mishnah continues. Any time in a girl's life when there is able to be miun, there's no chalitza, and when there's chalitza, there's no miun. So chalitza, we know, a man passed away, doesn't have any children, his wife is obligated to have either yibum, her brother, one of her husband's brothers will marry her, or chalitza, you're going to do the whole ceremony with taking off the shoe and so forth. Now, miyun is, midaraisa, father has the ability to marry off his daughter, to accept kedushin on her behalf when she's a ktana or a naira. And it's a full-fledged marriage min haTorah for all purposes. What happens if her father is dead, or you also have also a rare case called Yisrema B'chaya Av, which we're not going to get into right now, but there's a case where even her father's alive and still she's considered to be in her own jurisdiction. In such cases, though, both mother or brothers or somebody else might marry her. In that case, that marriage exists only on the bottom level, and therefore the Chachamim, who said that there is a marriage in that case, also said that there can be something called miun, which means refusal. She can verbally declare, I don't want to be married to this guy anymore, and it annuls the marriage as if it never existed. Now, that can happen only when she's a ktan. She can do miun only before she develops shtei sairus. So, when there's miun, before she develops shtei sairus and chalitza, then there cannot be chalitza because ktana cannot do chalitza. But the pasuk says, in the psukim over there, it says ish and isha about chalitza, meaning that they have to be adults and not children. V'chol makom sheyesh chalitza ein miun, vice versa, where there is chalitza, once she develops shtei sairus and is a naira, or any older than that, ein miun, then there's no miun, it's too late to do miun, the miun can take place only before she develops shtei sairus. Okay, so again, Omer Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Zud Divrei Reb Meir. Again, this is only a point to Reb Meir that the two of them are disjoint and it's either one or the other, and you never have a case where it can be both of them. The Chacham say that actually there is an overlap, namely that you could have a time in her life when she's able to do when she's able to do miyun and also able to do chalitza. It's the Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, and Moshe Abbas Nema Enes. Up until what age can a girl still do miyun? Again, when she was not married off by her father, when she was married off by somebody else, where the marriage exists only d'rabbanan. Ad she'tovi shtei sa'iros divrei meir. The meir says only until she develops shtei sa'iros. Rav Yehuda Emma, and she yirba hashachar ala lavan. Rav Yehuda says it's a later stage when the black increases over the white. Namely, in other words, Rav Yehuda says not just an eskal develops shtei sa'iros in the pubic area, it would actually have to be the skin in that area, like the rest of her body, is white. The hair is typically black. So when there's more black than white, different views. So as Tosis points out, you don't necessarily have the word ala lavan, but the point is, in other words, the Gemara explains in Nida that Yehuda says it has to be that the hairs are long enough. Fine, it's maybe only two hairs, but still they're long enough that now it looks as though you have more black than white. So it has to be that they're long enough to lie on the skin, and therefore it looks like now you have more black than white in that area. So the Yehuda says, in other words, now normally Shtei Sairus is only when with Shtei Sairus only have to only be long enough in order to be able to be folded over so that the tip touches the root, or slightly larger so that they can be, or slightly smaller so that they can be cut with scissors. But here, Rabbi Yehuda's amount, the hair is a grown a significant amount beyond that, and therefore, and yet, according to Rabbi Yehuda, she can still do miyun at that point, and yet she can already do chalitza at that point, because this whole ad she yirba hashachar is only specifically as far as miyun. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yehuda, there is an overlap, there's a period after she develops Shtei Sairus, but before the hair has grown long enough to be Shidir Ba'ashachar, when she can, in fact, do Chalitza and Miyun. Tosfos points out that there is yet instead of bringing a Braisa, there's actually a Mishnah in Masechta Nida about this, which mentions Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. However, the Gemara wants to bring the Braisa because it explicitly mentions the Meir, and that supports what Rabbi Yehuda is saying in our Gemara over here, that our Mishnah is specifically according to the Meir. There is yet another opinion, actually. In Yevamos, there is a Rabbi Yossi holds that a Kana could, in fact, do chalitza. So according to Rabbi Yossi also, so the Rashba in fact asks that the Gemara could have said, why the Gemara could have said that there's another opinion that's relevant over here, that according to Rabbi Yossi, she could do chalitza and miyun when she's a ktana. In any case, the point is our Mishnah is according to Rabbi Meir, who says that no, it's one or the other, there's no overlap. Okay. Mishnah says, further on this matter of when you have one, you don't have the other. Whenever you have tkiyas, before Shabbos and before Yom Tov, they would blow six tkiyas to tell people it's time to stop work. The Gemara in Masechta Shabbos goes into the details. After the first tkiyah, the field workers would stop working. After the second tkiyah, the storekeepers would close up their shops, etc. And so you have, for each one of the six tkiyas, there would be another activity, alerting everybody. There's another activity, so you have to wrap things up because Shabbos is coming. So whenever there's tkiyah, to tell us that Shabbos is coming, ain't havdala, then you don't say havdala in, then you don't say havdala, you don't say after chon amtanu, you don't say after chon amtanu, and you don't say havdala on a post. Because that's only when the time is the Bushra is ending. Before Mokum, Shiash Abdullah, ain't Tkiya. Vice versa, when there is Abdullah, Matzah Shabbos and Yom Tov, ain't Tkiya, then there's no Tkiya, because you don't need to tell the people. And the Tkiya is to tell people that the time of Kedusha is coming, that the time for restrictions on Malacha is coming, not that they're leaving. Now there is, the Rambam actually does write that on Matzah Shabbos they would blow the shofar, the trumpets, to tell people as mutter to work, and Achron and discuss how the Rambam would understand our Mishnah. In other words, that he's talking about when Yom Tov comes before Shabbos. If Yom Tov comes out on Friday, then you do blow to tell people, because after all, you have to tell people Yom Tov activities are over. It's time to stop the cooking and things that you could do on Yom Tov. But nevertheless, there's no Havdalah. You don't make Havdalah on Yom Tov that goes into Shabbos. Like here we just had, Shavuos was on Friday and Shabbos. You know, it's Yisrael, it was Friday only. They didn't say Havdalah. They didn't say after Chon Antonu or anything like that in davening on Friday nights, and then in the Kavdala. This is Yom Tov, the Kedusha of Yom Tov expires when Shabbos begins. You don't need a Havdala for it. But in that case, there wouldn't be. I'm going to understand that means there is tea over there, because you do need to inform people till now. You're able to cook and bake and do other things like that, and now you won't be able to anymore. On the other hand, when there's Havdala, then there's no tea, then it means the other way around. When Yom Tov comes out on Sunday, then there is Avdallah. There's Yak Nehaz, but combined together, Kiddush and Avdallah. But on the other hand, there's no Tkiyah. You don't blow the shofar in that case to tell people that it's mutter to work, because Tkiyah is also in the Rabbanan, and we're only allowing it on Yom Tov, which comes out on Friday, to tell people it's time for Shabbos to come. So therefore, there was still a couple of Achronim, the Chaste David and the Lev Aryeh, understand that Rambam in that vein. So according to the other Rishonim, who just think straightforward, on a regular Friday, there is Tkiyah, but there's no Havdalah, because Havdalah, by definition, is only when a time of Kedusha is over, and vice versa, on Motzi Shabbos, there's Havdalah, and there's no Tkiyah. The Mishnah continues, Yom Tov Shechal is the Ed of Shabbos, Tokin Bolim Avdil. So now, according to the explanation that we just said, according to the Rambam, the Mishnah is now teaching out what it was saying in the first part. According to the other Mishnah, it's telling us a different case. When Yom Tov comes out on Erev Shabbos, Turkin, they do blow shofar shortly before Shabbos to tell people that it's time to stop the cooking and baking and carrying or whatever for Shabbos. They ever blame Abdullah, they don't say Abdullah, because again, you don't say Abdullah when Yom Tov goes into Shabbos. Shabbos is more stringent than Yom Tov, so there's no appropriate, you don't need to have Abdullah for there. What's coming in, Shabbos is more humble than what's going out, Yom Tov, therefore there's no need for Abdullah at that point. The Mitzvah Shabbos, when Yom Tov comes out on Motzei Shabbos, Mavzilin, then we say Havdalah. We maybe do Yak Nehaz, because we need the stronger Kedusha of Shabbos is going away, and the lesser Kedusha of Yom Tov is coming in, and therefore we need a Havdalah. We need to say Apavatodienu in davening, and to combine together Havdalah with Kiddush and Yak Nehaz to mark Shabbos going away. The Lord Toikin, but we don't blow shofar because you don't. Because you're not informing people that Malacha is mutter. So the Mishnah finishes off. Kate said, Mabulin, how do you, when you're saying when Yom Tov comes out on Motzei Shabbos, what is the Nusach of Avdolah you say? Amalgam and Kodesh L'Kodesh. You said Hashem distinguishes between one Kodesh and another, because Shabbos and Yom Tov are both Kodesh. And therefore, you're saying that Hashem, so normally you would say Amalgam and Kodesh L'Kodesh, but here you can't say L'Kodesh, because after all, it's not a weekday, so therefore you would say Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh. Reb Dosa and Reb Kodesh Chomer, L'Kodesh HaKal, Reb Dosa says you have to be more specific, you have to say between the stronger Kodesh and the weaker Kodesh. So they must just hate me, take care. Not exactly. We're saying that if Erev Shabbos comes out on Yom Tov, you do blow shofar to tell people that Shabbos is coming. However, the Rashi explains that Gemara knows as an obvious matter that you're going to have to do this here differently than usual. Because after all, on a regular Friday, you need to tell people. Today was a regular weekday. You were allowed to do all malachas. Now is coming in Shabbos, and you're also to do any malach. On the other hand, when you're going from Yom Tov to Shabbos, the fact is most malachas are also on Yom Tov as well. So it's obvious that you need some kind of variation in the tzkiyas to allude people to that fact. So what do you do? I'm going to be able to take care of Maria Mitzvah. What you do is you start, normally the tzkiyas are tzkiyah through tzkiyah and tzkiyah through tzkiyah. In this case, says Rabbi Yehuda, you do the tzkiyah and you continue the tzkiyah. You continue the truer consecutively from the tefillah. So in other words, you start a tefillah, and then without making a break, then you right away go into the truer. And that's the difference. Normally you do tefillah and a pause, and then the truer. Here you do them one going into the other. But Rav Asi says no. Tekeo medeh b'neshima. What he would do is he would blow the tefillah and then the truer in one breath. So there would be a slight break between them, but it would be all in one breath, which would also be different than usual, where he does them in separate breaths. And the Gemara says, Asi, Rav Asi, Behutzel. In fact, Rav Asi made a tachana in Behutzel, which was the city where he lived, where he was the Rav, Hishmaite, according to his teaching, that when Yom Tov is on Friday and you're blowing the shofar shortly before Shabbos, that you should do tefillah, then a slight break, and then shura, but all in one breath. This kind of thing, by the way, is more negaya. Nowadays, we don't blow shofar before Shabbos begins. And we have a crown heights and in other places, we have sirens to alert us that Shabbos is coming. But this kind of thing of what you do in one breath or what you don't is negaya when it comes to the tekiyas on Rosh Hashanah, whether we do the shvarim tshuah in one breath or whether we do them in separate breaths. So it's mostly Macy, though. I have a contradiction. A Braisa says, Yom Tov Shechal Yisrael Shabbos, Token Velomirian. If Yom Tov comes out on Erev Shabbos, they would blow a Tekiyah, but not a Teruah. My love, Loimirian, it sounds like we say we don't blow a Teruah at all. There is both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Asi who are saying we do blow a Teruah. They're just saying you do it differently than you need. So the answer is no, that's not what the Braisa means. Rav Yehuda Matarisa Tame, but Rav Asi Matarisa Tame. Both Rav Yehuda and Rav Asi can explain the Braisas according to their respective shittas. Rav Yehuda Matarisa Tame, Loi Mirian B'Snei Asma, he'll say, the Braisa says Loi Mirian, doesn't mean you don't blow a true idol. It means you don't blow a separate true idol. Element of Tia, but rather you continue the true from within the Tkiah. In other words, you do the Tkiah, and then straight through, you go into the Tzus. Rav Asi, Matarisa Tame, Rav Asi will understand that according to his shita, Loi Marian, the Shrein Hashinah, so you don't do the Tekiah and the Trua in two breaths like you normally would, Alam Hashinah Achas only in one breath, but with a slight break between. Next, we said in the Mishnah of Matzoi Shabbos Fuller, when Yom Tov comes out on Matzoi Shabbos, we said we do say Havdalah, we say Batoyenu in Davening, and we say Havdalah in Yaknahaz by Kiddush. But then we said in the Mishnah that you say the Nusach has a Mavzor ben Kodesh to Kodesh. So the Mishnah says, Heicha Omalah, where exactly do you say this Nusach has a Mavzor ben Kodesh to Kodesh? Omer Rav Yehuda Bachasi Masa, you say it at the end of the Bracha of Havdalah. So you're doing Yaknahaz, and you get to the end of it. You finish off Baruch Atah Hashem Hamavdur Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh, but not at the beginning of it. At the beginning of it, you're still going to say Hamavdur Ben Kodesh L'Chol. Says it if you hold on. B'chein Omer Rav Nachman Bachasi Masa. Rav Nachman says the same thing that you say Hamavdur Ben Kodesh L'Kodesh only at the end of the book. Rav Sheshes, Rav Yehuda Omer, on the other hand, Rav Sheshes, Rav Yehuda, he says, Achba Psifasa, also at the beginning of the Bracha. So according to him, the Bracha of Abdullah and Yaknahaz would begin, Hamnazim and Baruch HaTashem, Elkan Malachalam, Hamnazim and Kodesh the Kodesh, and then continue with the rest of it, Ben Orla, Choshach, etc. However, the Gemara says, Veles Hilchsakaba say, the Halacha is not like Rav Sheshes, Rav Yehuda, the Halacha is like Rav Yehuda and Rav Nachman, that we say, Hamavdur ben Kodesh l'Chol at the beginning, and Hamavdur ben Kodesh l'Kodesh at the end. The reason for that is, Rashi explains, because the body of the bracha, why are we mentioning all these things, ben Kodesh l'Chol, ben l'Choshech, ben Yisrael l'Amin, etc., we're listing different things where it says in Pesukim that Hashem distinguished between one thing and another. We find in Pesukim that Hashem distinguished between Kodesh and Chol. We find that Hashem distinguished between Ur and Chol. And so, now, but it doesn't say in the Torah that Hashem distinguished between Kodesh and Kodesh. Therefore, at the beginning of the Bracha, when we're giving that list, we want to say Hamavdur ben Kodesh l'Chol. Only at the end, when we're finishing off the Bracha, then appropriately for the Yom Tov, we say Hamavdur ben Kodesh l'Chol. So we do say that at the end. What happens, by the way, if he does say Hamavdur ben Kodesh l'Chol, so then you have a discussion among the poskim what you do in that case. If you accidentally said Hamavdur ben Kodesh l'Chol, then are you yotzer or not? Anyway, so the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rav Zera, Yom Tov Shechalvius Be'emtz Shabbos, if Yom Tov comes out in the middle of the week, I skipped a line. Rav Dosa Omer, Ben Kodesh Afil, you mean Kodesh Fomer, or Kodesh Akal, Rav Dosa had said that the wording should be between the stronger Kodesh and the weaker Kodesh, and again, the Gemara says, V'les Hilch Sakabasei, the Halacha is not like it, because we don't want as much as, fine, Yom Shabbos is greater than Yom Tov, but we still don't want to put down Yom Tov and call it Kodesh Akal, a lesser Kodesh. So we can say, Amal Domain Kodesh Akodesh, we understand for ourselves, of course, that that's what it means, between the greater Kodesh of Shabbos and the lesser Kodesh of Yom Tov, but we don't want to spell that out so explicitly. Alright, we finish off. Omer Rav Zera, Yom Tov Shechali is Be'emtza Shavua, Be'emtza Shabbos. If Yom Tov comes out in the middle of the week, Omer Hamavdur Ben Kodesh L'Chol, Ben Or L'Choshech, Ben Yisroel La'amin, Ben Yem HaShvi, the Sheshes of Ma'amayisah, we say the exact same Nusach as we do on Motzei Shabbos. The Gemara says, night timer. Why is that? Now, on the face of it, we're saying Ben Yem HaShvi, the Sheshes of Ma'amayisah, but that doesn't seem to be relevant when Yom Tov comes out in the middle of the week. And the answer is, like we said before, Seder Havdalah Sulmoyna, because he's just listing the different things that it says in the Torah, where Hashem distinguished between one thing and another, and you have to have, as Rashi points out, Ma'in Chasima, Samach L'Chasima, you have to have the last thing that we mentioned before the end of the Bracha, before the final Baruch Atah Hashem, has to be along the theme of that. Therefore, we have to finish off with Ben Yem HaShvi, the Shesh of Ma'amayisah, which is an example of distinguishing between Kodesh and Chol. So therefore, even on Motzei Yom Tov, in the middle of the week, no, you don't have even though you don't, even though it's not really nevertheless, we do have to mention that at that point, because we're listing the order of Havdalos, the order of things that it says that Hashem distinguished between one thing and another. Hadron Allah HaKol Shoktim.